All right, we are live at Target Field. What an absolutely beautiful day. It's hot, but it's summer. That's what you want, isn't it? I think it's what you want. Welcome to Drive Time with DeRussia. Dan is here. I am here. No batting practice today at Target Field in advance of 7. Is it? It's 6:40.
6:40 first pitch, so pregame will start at 6 o'clock right when we're done. A bit of a late evening last night for all the lads, so I'm sure they had a late call time today, and they're going to pass on batting practice. Maybe doing some work back underneath in the cages, but that's about it.
I am not sure what's going on here tonight.
There's a lot of tiaras around us
right
now.
There are so many tiaras here at Target Field. We seem to have, like, the princesses and the royalty from all over Minnesota. All the ambassadors. I saw the Melrose ambassador. I saw Derry. Can I ask one of our royalty members? We're on WCCO Radio. What are you guys doing? What's going on here? Can I ask you a question? Don't be afraid. You have a giant TR. What's your name?
Denali Joe.
Denali, nice to meet you. You're from Glencoe?
Yes.
And what is going on? Why is there so much royalty here at Target Field?
Because we wanted to come see the game, and now we're going to go have a parade on the field, I'm pretty sure.
What? Is this what your life is mostly now that you've become an ambassador? You're a prince. Are you a princess or a queen, do you consider yourself? You're a miss.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What's the difference?
I just have a bigger crown.
So it's very large. I mean, we're on the radio, so it's a good 4 inches tall.
Yeah, it makes me really tall.
Yeah, that's good, right? That's a little power for you. I like it.
Yeah.
Is your life mostly parades now?
Right now. I've only been doing this for a month, so I'm still getting used to it, but it's been mainly parades, yeah.
It's not bad.
No, I love it.
Yeah, I love a parade also. I used to be a TV news guy, and I would get to Grand Marshal a parade. And it's all, you know, it's the wave. Like, do you do the stereotypical princess wave? Or
this one.
Or you do it, it's a cross. And a, do they teach that?
No, it's just whatever everybody feels like doing.
I like it. All right, you go back to school. Where do you go to school?
Glencoe Silver Lake High School.
And you'll be what year?
I'm a senior now.
You're a senior?
Yeah.
Rising senior. And then off to school maybe, or you don't know?
I don't know where yet, but I have a few ideas.
All right. Well, maybe radio future broadcaster here. I don't know. You have very good presence to be absolutely, accosted here at Target Field.
You make me nervous when you just turn around.
You know, throughout my life, I've had that effect on women, so it happens all the time. Thank you for being on CCO Radio.
Thank you.
All right, very good. There it is. You know, I mean, Dan, when you see, like, 45 princesses,
yeah,
you sort of got to ask what the heck is going on.
You do.
And since we're asking what the heck is going on, why don't we do the D-Rush Hour News headlines? Let's do the lead.
The headlines you might have missed. Without missing a beat. This is your fast pass through the biggest and most impactful stories of the day. Welcome to the D-Rush Hour headlines. Starting with the lead.
And our first story in the lead, obviously, as we continue to follow the cyber attack, the newsroom doing a great job covering what's going on in St. Paul. I want to start as a guy who is, you know, Medicare is something that I can see from where I'm standing. Medicaid is a lifeline for so many people who need access to medical care. And the state is sounding a little bit of an alarm as to how much money in Medicaid funding is at risk because of the new law passed by the Republican Congress. 140,000 Minnesotans may lose their coverage over the next 4 years. That's about 12% of enrollment. And I wanted to know, all right, what's going on? Are people really getting kicked off who shouldn't be kicked off? Or is this something else? Let's bring in the Minnesota Medicaid Director, Dr. John Connolly, on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. John, is this about people who will no longer be eligible, or is this the state maybe a little more concerned about people falling through the cracks on all the new paperwork that's required?
No, it's really that the vast majority of people who are in the program presently are working. So we know that 2/3 or more, even according to some estimates here in Minnesota, are working. And that's among people who are working age, so 19 to 64. We know that those who aren't working, the vast majority of that group, so the remaining third or fewer, actually have a reason under the new federal law that would cause them to be exempt from the work requirement. So they have a reason for not working, which includes things like caregiving, things like a chronic condition or disability, that or they're in school, for example. So that leads them not to be working. And really only a small share, a remainder, you know, less than 10% are not working without one of those reasons. So really, the vast majority of people in the program currently meet the requirement or actually would qualify for an exemption. So this is, you know, an issue where we really worry that people who are qualified will lose their coverage or lose their eligibility as a result of the new paperwork requirements and the red tape associated with them.
John Connolly is with us, the state Medicaid director, DHS deputy commissioner. In Minnesota, we call Medicaid medical assistance. Who is on medical assistance in Minnesota? What is the bulk of that group of people?
That's a great question, and it's a broad range of different folks. So it could be pregnant women. It could be children. It could be people with disabilities, older adults in skilled nursing facilities, and it could just also be families who need health coverage because they've had a challenging or difficult economic situation. So it's a wide variety of folks. The program covers just under 1 in 4 Minnesotans presently.
So who has to process this new paperwork, this new requirement? I mean, what sort of outreach is going on to make sure that at least as many people don't kind of fall through the paperwork cracks here on this as possible?
So for Medicaid and or medical assistance here in Minnesota, as we call it, the counties and tribal nations do the vast majority of the eligibility and enrollment work for the program. A lot of the workload could be handled through information systems. We're trying to explore the most streamlined way that we can handle these processes electronically, but we do know some share of this work will have to be done manually or on paper.
This isn't happening immediately, is it? When do these big changes really start to take effect?
No. So the two requirements that we've talked about related to eligibility will be implemented at the end of next year and into 2027. So those two things take effect at the end of 2026. And that's when those come into effect in tandem. There are other provisions of the bill also that begin to come into effect in 2027, 2028, 2029 and beyond. So it's really staggered over a number of years. I should note a few provisions have already taken effect because they were essentially effective at enactment.
Got it. But we have some time at least to get the word out and try to get used to whatever sort of infrastructure is going to be needed here to try to at least make sure people who need coverage are still able to get it.
That's a really good point. So we're really focused on two activities between now and the end of 2026 when these provisions take effect. I think the first is, as I described, making the process as streamlined as possible, both for the person applying for or renewing their coverage, as well as for eligibility workers in the counties, in addition to communicating with the community and with program
sure.
members and those
yeah.
who may be applying for coverage so that they can get through the process successfully and maintain their coverage.
Makes sense. It's good to be talking about it early. It's big numbers. It's eye-popping. So hopefully we can streamline that as best as possible. John Connolly, State Medicaid Director and DHS Deputy Commissioner. We appreciate the time. Thanks, John.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Next up in the lead is good news if you are Ilhan Omar. Star Tribune reporting today that it looks like nobody wants to run against her. Frankly, I am 0% surprised at this. Ilhan Omar has been elected time and time again, and probably the strongest opponent was Don Samuels the first time he ran. But the reality is Ilhan Omar is an outstanding representative of her district's views. You may think she's too far left, but this is that district. It's the core of Minneapolis, some inner suburbs. But at this point, it sounds like nobody's going to run. For the first time ever, Governor Tim Walz, Senator Amy Klobuchar endorsing Ilhan Omar early. Everybody, Attorney General Ellison, Senator Tina Smith, all backing her, all of them together. Top-tier candidates are saying, I'm out. Don Samuels, no. former DFL majority leader Ryan Winkler? No. The reality is nobody significant is going to run against her, and she is going to be reelected once again. Next up in the lead, if you are like me and you went to the 3M Open this weekend, you probably threw out some trash. And the good news is your trash is going to become electricity. I thought this is so cool and so interesting because at least something good is going to come out of that half-eaten pita that I threw in the trash at the 3M Open. Varesco is the name of the company that's doing it. Joe Burke is with us on CCO to talk more about it. Joe, this is really, really cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool stuff, right? I mean, taking food waste and turning it into renewable energy is pretty unique, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, your Varesco is in Turtle Lake, and how do you do it? How do you turn this is mostly the food trash, right? Like my half-eaten pita with a steak on it is out in Wisconsin now.
It actually got to Wisconsin today, so it's out there. It's called anaerobic digestion, and it's a biological process that it breaks down the food and turns it into a form of methane gas, and it's called biogas. It's like a cow's stomach.
It's pretty amazing, and it goes right from your facility, kind of gets sent into XL Energy's power grid. Is that how it works?
It does. So the particular product from the 3M Open goes to our depackaging facility, right? Because that half-eaten piece of food that you threw away might have had a paper napkin around it or been in one of those boat trays.
I use napkins. So, yep, there is a napkin in there. Yep. There is a boat tray. Yep, exactly.
Yep. So those are separated out from the actual food waste. And that food waste that goes into these huge tanks there, we have about 5 million gallons worth of tankage on site. And that product, that food waste, you know, it's ground up and it goes into these tanks. And biology takes it and breaks it down and turns it into methane gas or biogas. And we run that through two big generators, and those generators are synced up to the XL Energy power grid right there in Turtle Lake, Wisconsin, and we put it right on the grid for XL Energy.
That's so cool. Joe Burke is the CEO of Varesco. And Joe, like, I mean, you guys are doing this for the 3M Open, but you're doing this for all sorts of breweries and grocery stores and food factories. This is all around the country, kind of with as cutting edge and state of the art as it gets in this area is what you guys are doing.
You're exactly right. We have a patented process around this. We worked for a number of years with our patent attorney and the USDA, and we take a bunch of food waste from cheese producers, from the 3M Open, and turn it into electricity.
I love it.
So we've taken feedstock from as far away as California, New Jersey, and Tennessee. But the vast majority of our feedstock is here in the upper Midwest.
It's pretty cool. Joe Burke, I hope you guys make a ton of money. And it makes me feel great that we're able to kind of close the loop a little bit and take some of this food waste, which is such a problem in our country, and do something good with it and make some electricity. Cool, cool stuff.
Well, I appreciate that you appreciate that, Jason.
It is cool stuff. Joe Burke from Varesco. That is the lead. Page 2 is coming your way in just a couple of minutes. We will talk a little bit more about the federal prosecutor who has been targeting fraud in Minnesota. And which state fair is the best? Why am I so irritated by this story in the Pioneer Press, Iowa or Minnesota? We'll talk about that when we come back. Live at Target Field, Twins baseball here on CCO tonight. D-Rush Hour News Headlines continues with page 2. And we start with the federal prosecutor who's been targeting fraud in Minnesota. Star Tribune with a profile of Joe Thompson, the acting U.S. attorney. We've had him on the show. Attorneys I've talked to have been quite impressed with him. So the Star Tribune with this Q&A, Dina Winter. Turns out Joe's an Osseo High School grad. He led the prosecution, the Feeding Our Future fraud, which former U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland called the nation's largest pandemic relief fraud scheme to result in charges. But he's really been going after this massive scheme in a state housing stabilization problem. You have heard him say, he was on with Chad, saying that the amount of money lost is over $1 billion. If I were a Republican running for office, I would talk about fraud. And then I would talk some more about fraud. And then I would talk some more about fraud. Fraud, 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 fraud. That would be my campaign. Because it's not good. Thompson worked at a Chicago law firm. What I find interesting about him is he's not, as far as I don't know what his politics are. He's not a Trump guy. He's not getting the permanent gig as U.S. attorney. But, you know, he joined the U.S. attorney's office in Chicago, he said, the day Barack Obama was inaugurated as president, which he said, what a memorable day in Chicago and then in his life. But he did a lot of gang prosecutions, a lot of fraud cases at the U.S. attorney's office there. And then coming here has been pretty cool. Which state fair would you say is the best state fair? Is it Minnesota or is it Iowa?
Our state fair is a great state fair.
Sure, yeah. Our state fair is a great state fair. This to me is like, I'm unreasonably irritated at this story in the Twin Cities Pioneer Press. My friend Kathy Burden writes this story, and I'm like, well, finally. Kathy is not going to mamby-pamby around and equivocate. She is going to write a real story and make a real determination, and she laid out a lot of evidence if you want to compare Iowa and Minnesota. It's not all vibes, right? So she said, so there were three former Des Moines Register employees who went out and did this thing last year. So she's had a year to think about how she was going to write a story that finishes saying, well, you know, whichever one you like the best is the best. Like, Kathy, come on. The headline says which one is truly best. And then the last paragraph of this story says, well, I don't know. Why did we bother? Why did we bother? This thing is so long. And then at the end, the verdict, our resolve to name the best of the two state fairs melted like a butter sculpture on an asphalt parking lot in August. There's so much to love about East. Just delete your journalism card. This reminds me of a time in 2019 I asked Amy Klobuchar which state fair was better. And did she answer the question, Dan Cook? Do you think Amy Klobuchar, who at the time was running for president, would give me a straight answer on the WCCO Morning News?
That would be no.
Hell no.
No.
This is easy. You are allowed to take a position on something that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
You're not going to lose the Iowa primary if you say the Minnesota State Fair is better.
You're from here. It's fine. Our state fair is better. Iowa, you can suck it, as far as I'm concerned. 531, that's the D-Rush Hour News headlines. Which is in jeopardy of being canceled.
Quite clearly, yes.
That's fine. Dan Hayes, he's not a coward like Kathy is.
He'll tell it like it is.
Twins made a trade yesterday. Trade deadline is 2 days almost exactly from now.
Yep.
We'll talk to Dan about what the trade did in the clubhouse and a great win for the Twins yesterday in just a minute here on Drive Time. Well, we have kind of an emergency Dan Hayes visit here on this Tuesday afternoon. Dan usually joins us on Friday, but with all the trade deadline excitement or anticipation, we've asked if he would join us today, and he's with us here at Target Field. Good to see you, Dan.
Good to see you, too.
So let's start with the breaking news that really just happened within the last half hour or so about Byron Buxton.
Right. Byron Buxton is going on the IL for 10 days with left rib inflammation. And We already knew it probably on Saturday that this team was selling, but if you just needed another kind of nail in the coffin to say this is the time, this is what they're going to do, this is it. Byron Buxton unfortunately goes hurt himself over the weekend, left the game Saturday and or was it Friday?
Yeah.
All those days are mixed together at this point. But, yeah, he's – they hoped, and I think worst-case scenario-wise, he's in a better spot. Like, this isn't a huge oblique injury, but clearly they weren't seeing enough of a response. They were pretty guarded about talking about it before, so I don't have a whole lot on it. But
it they backdated it to when it happened.
Correct,
but.
Yeah. But we did not talk about it with the manager. We didn't talk about it with Byron, so I think we'll get a bit clearer picture on that tomorrow. But obviously yet another setback for this team right at a time when they're determining whether or not to pull the plug.
Last night's victory was super exciting in, you know, bottom of the ninth, walk-off kind of situation for the Twins. Classic. This is exactly what I predicted was going to happen yesterday, that, you know, after struggling so much against pretty bad teams.
Yeah.
That you play a decent team that's been playing well, and of course the Twins now put on a really nice show yesterday.
I mean, it was pretty entertaining because the rains came.
Yes.
And the rains saved them because Jordan Hicks was warming up before the ninth inning, and he came out even after the 90-minute delay, and he was off. He hit two batters, and it fell apart. But you're right. I mean, look, they just played a terrible stretch against Rockies, the Nationals, the Dodgers sandwich in between. But I think, you know, they actually looked okay against the Dodgers, even though they lost 2-3. But to go 3-6 in that stretch just really sealed their fate. And we saw Chris Paddock get traded yesterday. And as Danny Coulomb said just an hour ago, that's when it got real. Like, we know this is now a thing. It's going to happen. So now we're in this mode where it's 48 hours right now, roughly 47 and a half until the deadline. And we will see quite a few trades.
This is really when it heats up, and I think the main question we've been wondering is, are these trades going to be with players who are going to become free agents anyway? So those are sort of the low-stakes moves that you expect a team to do when they know they're sort of out of it.
Right. It's not – look, the real question is, do they dig deep? Do they trade Joe Ryan or Griffin Jacks or Yoan Duran?
Those would be the moves that would make you say, like, whoa.
Right. That's a different step. When you have six free agents, the likelihood those guys are coming back, you'd love to bring a few of them back. You'd love to extend Willie Castro. You would love to extend Danny Coulomb. Keep them around. It's not going to happen, especially with payroll probably being tight. There's a group of...
Well, you could still go get them if you wanted to.
You could, but there's a group of arbitration-eligible players. Yeah. It's 11 deep, and they are getting more expensive. It's going to reduce the amount of payroll flexibility that they have next year. So, you know, I mean, I think they'd love to keep those guys, but it's not going to happen. So get the value you can while you can, because these are usable pieces. Teams are lining up to talk. Harrison Bader is a popular player. Willie Castro is a popular player.
And Bader's been a good pickup, I think.
He has.
You want to look at, like, the moves that the front office has made, to me, Bader is a move where you're like, you know what?
The bat doesn't blow you away.
No.
But the defense has, and the bat has been very
good enough.
It's been really solid.
Yeah.
And I think when you consider all those things, a team that's looking for a right-handed bat for their outfield who also can play center left, like, that's very valuable. So none of these guys are going to bring them a ton in return. They got the number 14 prospect from the Tigers for Paddock last night. Also, they were able to attach Randy Dobnak.
Not the number 14 prospect overall.
The
number 14 in that organization.
Right. But it's still there was a Dodgers scout who I talked to yesterday who had just been to Florida, and he said, this is a real prospect. He's a good player. So there's a chance there. And it's,
yeah,
you know,
I saw, like, some grades on that trade, and it was like,
grades are, yeah, look.
I love a grade.
I'm just going to be
honest. Oh, you don't like a grade?
No, I'm just going to be honest. Our guys are very good at what they do. But we're all just guessing, okay? Look, the grades are nice, and
I took this to the bank. Steven Nesbitt.
Nez is the best.
Nez said the Tigers got a B, the Twins got a B plus.
And you know what? I think the Twins,
maybe
the front
true.
Office,
I don't know.
Derek Falvey probably gets a few extra points because he saved $4.6 million with that.
That's
and
right.
Going back to right sizing the payroll.
That's a B plus,
you know,
for sure.
Like, things are going well. Derek Falvey got a little attaboy to this morning that he got Randy Dobnak in that trade.
Dan Hayes is with us. You wrote what I thought was really an interesting story inside the clubhouse, because when you had the first trade go down, you know, there's a lot of, it's just a bunch of idiots like us before that saying, like, are they going to be sellers? They probably should be sellers. But you wrote really about what the reaction was.
Right.
It's pretty emotional.
It is. And I didn't even do the stuff post-game. Deshaun Kersey laid it out last night. Because it was midnight, I don't know if you guys saw that 90-minute wonderfully timed rain delay. Yeah. We love rain delays in the press box.
Oh, yeah. Especially a nice late one.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So I didn't add in the Deshaun Kersey quote, but he said when he hit the opposite field home run, he got back. He said there were two things on that play. One, Christian Vasquez didn't think it was going to be a home run, and you could see him running back towards first base in case the ball got caught. And Vasquez had to stop him and say, don't run past me, don't run past me. And then he said the other thing that stood out to him about that play was when he got back to the dugout, Chris Paddock's usually the one with the home run helmet for the guys. He brought out the helmet. Everybody's seen it this year. Paddock played a big role in the clubhouse. Guys love him. He's a very charismatic player. He cares about his teammates. You know, I think all the stuff he's been through makes him kind of, I don't know, he's aware of what everybody else is going through. And when you have a veteran who's making $7.5 million, who cares about you and you're Deshaun Kersey and you're just trying to make your way in the majors, that's a big deal. And so, yeah, it's a very difficult time. Ryan Jeffers just got back today after being gone for 2 days for the birth of his child, and he said, we're just wondering how deep they go down the rabbit hole at this point. So, like, guys all know this is coming. Willie Castro wants to stay. Willie Castro told us in Colorado he'd be sad if he got traded. But it's going to happen. They all know it now, too.
The lineup is up for tonight. We'll talk about the Twins lineup and what they're doing with, you know, sort of a pitching shortage that they have because of the trade they made. We'll have that conversation with Dan Hayes in just a minute here from Target Field on CBS.
Let's take the current temp of your Minnesota Twins. Brought to you by Chef IQ Sense. Get your wireless meat thermometer now at chefiq.com.
All right, Dan, I know you love taking the temp of the Twins. It is, I mean, yesterday's win was nice. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, but what's below lukewarm and not in between lukewarm and raw?
Yeah.
What do we got? Mellow.
We're like, it's like a cold plunge bath temperature right now. We're not frozen, but we're in a cold plunge.
We are. It's that crazy time of year, too.
Yeah.
No sleep, waking up, check your text, put your head back down for 20 minutes, wake up again.
Check again.
I literally set my alarm starting at 7 in the morning every half hour, and I'm not a morning guy, especially you get out here at midnight. So, like, till 9 o'clock, I'm kind of comatose.
Talk to me a little bit about how the trade situation happens, because we know the trade deadline is Thursday at, 5 p.m.?
5 p.m. Central. Correct.
So could a player be traded right now, like an hour and a half before first pick?
That was the thing. Last night, I think people were speculating that Harrison Bader was out of the lineup because he might be traded. But that was just a line issue. They're, you know, Rocco is still going to try and win games.
Right.
Like, they might be selling, but they're going to win with what they have or try to win. And so he was going for a matchup there. And Bader came in later as a pinch hitter, and that's how it goes. But it's where Hug Watch comes in. Guys will be in the lineup. The most absurd thing I've ever seen was in 2011, Ubaldo Jimenez was going to start a game for the Rockies. Cleveland wanted him. The two teams were trying to jostle for position to the point where the Rockies sent him out and started him. He gave up 6 runs in the first inning. He was told before the game he probably wasn't going to start. So he goes out and he's like kind of just half winging it in the bullpen. He's not even going full bore. And he had the worst first inning of his career. Everybody knew it because Twitter was a thing. And people are like reacting to, I can't believe he's out there. And like this stuff happens.
Yeah.
It's all in real time. Derek Falvey, Jeremy Zoll, Daniel Adler, Sean Johnson, all those guys are up there texting, talking to people, gauging interest in their players.
I wonder if they're like encrypted. You know, are they doing it on Signal like our like our federal government does war plans now? I bet they are.
They have to, right? I mean, you got to try and protect.
And you don't want somebody like sharing your text and you're in trouble or whatever. But.
Exactly, and I think there's a like Slack. So that everybody in the organization can talk to each other and let each other know kind of what's going on. The same way our work organizations work. It's like, hey, these guys are calling. I'll take this, that kind of stuff. Like, that's just how it kind of goes. I think that it's a very fluid situation at all times, and it's interesting for sure.
The lineup just came out, and the pitcher for tonight is something called an OHL. OHL. What is this? What is happening?
Pearson Ohl. Yeah, he's one of the guys they've just now put on there. I think he got drafted in 2021. I'm totally winging it because, honestly, I spent very little time on this. But he is one of the guys that they have put on this plan this year where it's every 4 days he pitches about three innings, 65 pitches. Travis Adams, very similar. I don't know anything more about it right now. I think Bailey Ober pitches tomorrow to fill the second TBA. We have not heard that officially, but he's in the clubhouse and he's looking.
We saw him throwing out here a little earlier.
He's pretty confident that he is ready to be back after two rehab starts. But, you know, they're sitting here with two spots in the rotation right now after Paddock, who they will face potentially twice in the next 2 weeks.
It's kind of interesting, right? What year did you guess Pearson Ohl was drafted?
2021.
Nailed it.
Like 14th round, 13th
Correct.
Round?
Correct. 14th round.
Grand Canyon University.
Correct.
I know that because I have a friend from there. But
that's very impressive.
So.
He's 25 years old. Why not? Like, let's go.
I mean,
welcome to the show. What do you got?
Right. And on the position side, when Bader and Castro go, we'll see possibly Luke Kuechel, Austin Martin, especially with Buxton out. So those will be more familiar. The pitching side could get interesting because a lot of guys have been hurt this year.
It's going to be an interesting 48 hours or so for these players.
I won't get any sleep. I will continue to – it'll be weird. I just wanted to – my favorite all-time deadline story. 2021, I'm doing a radio hit with Roger Lodge. Anybody's seen Blind Date? That's Roger Lodge. He's the Angels pre- and post-game host. And Nelson Cruz gets traded, and we're about to go on the air, and he knows I want to run. And he says in the first second, he's like, Dan, hey, it's so wonderful. I know you feel like you got to go because of the Nelson Cruz trade, but such a generous guy to stay on the air with me. He held me to it.
And he made you sit there and do it.
Blind Date was entertaining enough. I felt like I owe Roger Lodge a little bit. So,
you know. He's like a sports host now, right?
Yes.
So there you go. All right, very good. Dan, thank you for being here. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks.
You can read him at theathletic.com. Sometimes it's in the New York Times, but you can get the app and the whole deal. From Dan Hayes. Pre-game starts in just a couple of minutes. We got a pretty good crowd here. All of the princesses and the royalty from small-town Minnesota, they're walking all over the field right now. So pretty fun stuff. Pre-game here, first pitch in 40 minutes. We'll be back in studio tomorrow.